Hey John, when you were in kindergarten and elementary school, how did you do? How were your grades?
Oh crap, dude, I don't know. You know how long ago that was?
I mean, you weren't very good at like the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s and all that. I mean,
I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, I knew him.
I'm kind of assuming you weren't.
Why?
Because you're a
How?
Jeep guy.
What?
Have you ever tried to count in Jeep?
Yeah, I mean, not
Or do
really.
the alphabet in Jeep?
I can only get up to 8. That's all I know.
Yeah.
It's time to hit the trail. Lock in those hubs and throw it into low range. Because you are listening to Wheel It with Keith and Johnny Orange, broadcasting from the Thin Line Off-Road Studio. They're here to talk about 4x4s, trucks, and everything to do with enjoying the great outdoors. Buckle up. Here's your hosts, Keith and Johnny Orange.
All right, welcome to Wheeling with Keith and Johnny Orange. I'm Keith Codette of Thin Line Off-Road, and I got my co-host over here, Johnny Orange. How you doing today, John?
Not bad. How about yourself and everybody else out there?
Right, sounds good. We're all doing great, of course. We're here in the Thin Line Off-Road studio. I was just poking fun at John there about his kindergarten days. We were discussing counting in Jeep. If anybody out there has ever really paid that much attention, of course you Jeep guys have. Jeep has done something pretty interesting, not just counting, but the alphabet, of course. We started out with CJ2, at least for civilian Jeeps after the war. All our wartime Jeeps were things like the Willys MB and the Ford GPW and then the Bantam and the Willys MA, and there's a whole number of them. But
oh, yeah.
The civilian Jeeps started with the CJ2, and then the CJ2A, and then the CJ3, and then where'd the CJ4 go?
There was actually a CJ4. At least there was some evidence of a prototype.
It's being restored or has been restored, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so CJ4, they kind of skipped over.
Here's a funny one for you, though. The CJ3A came out, then the CJ4, then they went back to CJ3B.
I did not know that the 4 came out between the A and the B on the CJ3.
Supposedly.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, one of these, I got a couple of guys that are real Jeep historians we need to get on here someday. But you know what episode this is, John?
I don't know. I'm not good at counting. You already pointed that out to everybody. Thanks.
Yeah. This is episode 7. Okay, so for episode 7, we have decided to talk about the Jeep CJ7. The Jeep CJ7, of course, you know, you're looking at all these different numbers of Jeeps, CJ5, CJ3, CJ6. You'd wonder, well, why are we going to focus specifically on the CJ7? There's a couple reasons for that. The Jeep CJ7 really is what started to enter in the modern era of Jeep.
Oh, yeah.
It is what the Wrangler, which, of course, came out with the YJ models based off of, but the CJ7 was the last, I don't want to use short wheelbase as... It was the shorter wheelbase. It was longer than the CJ5, but it was the last of the shorter wheelbase vehicles that used the number designation before they went over to straight letters. So the Jeep CJ7, John, came out when?
The first year of that one, I want to say it was...
76?
I think so. Again, yes. I'm bad with numbers, man. You got to go point this out in front of everybody.
Yeah, okay. So up until 76, Jeep had been producing very short wheelbase vehicles with the only exception, when we're talking about the open top vehicles here, we're not talking about the trucks or the Wagoneers or the Willys wagons or anything like that. We're talking about the open top Jeeps.
Wrangler style.
Yeah, Wrangler style. Yeah. The quintessential Jeep, you know, the open top, you can remove the doors Jeep. So up until the CJ7, they had been producing very short wheelbase vehicles, typically sub 95 wheelbase. I think some of the CJ5s and whatnot were like 88, 92 wheelbase, things like that. So they were producing these very short vehicles, with the exception of the CJ6, which was a stretched version of the CJ5. It shared the same small door opening, but the rear end of it was stretched out, and you could get it with a half cab, truck type cab. It was essentially the predecessor to the later Jeep Scrambler, which was the CJ8.
Yeah, quick sub note on that. If you recall from one of our previous episodes, we talked about the Jeepster Commandos C101, the 104.
Correct.
I actually found a note in here. One of the, so it's not CJ7 related. It's similar to the CJ6, but it was a CJ5 that was built down in Brazil. They actually call it the Willys Jeep 101. That was in 1961. And that stayed around until Ford took over in 67.
That was a CJ5 based Jeep?
It was a CJ5 based, made in Brazil. They called it very similar to the CJ6, but it was kind of coined the Willys Jeep 101.
Okay. All right.
So more in those historical numbers.
Yeah, I love those historical notes. And the CJ5, which we've mentioned a couple of times already, I believe that was the longest running of any of the Jeep models for the open top. I believe the CJ5 design came out around 52 or 53, and then they ran that all the way up into the early 80s before they discontinued it. But going back to the CJ7, which came out in 1976, was a whole new Jeep. This was really meant to be something that was a little more comfortable, a little more leg room, had a back seat. Earlier ones did too, but you could actually fairly comfortably fit four people in a CJ7.
Not me size people, but
well, you know, probably me either. I'm 6'2", so you know, no, I do all right in them. As you pointed out to me prior to the show, the CJ5 was the first version of the Wrangler style vehicles that you could get an automatic trans in. Air conditioning, even though in limited numbers, air conditioning was a pretty rare option.
Yeah.
The CJ7, though, it became pretty common.
Yeah.
You could get the CJ7 very common with an automatic transmission. You could get it very commonly with air conditioning. And the interior got to be a little bit fancier. The seats were a little cushier. You now get the high back seats. It was really something that was meant to start to move the Wrangler, they weren't even called Wranglers back then, they're open-top Jeeps.
Yeah.
Moving the open-top Jeep over to the civilian market even more so. A little, dare I say, less rugged, although still a very rugged vehicle.
Oh, yeah. They're still used a lot in mud racing today, even.
Yeah, very popular with that. So the CJ7, and then its long wheelbase brother, which is the CJ8, which was produced concurrently at the same time as the CJ7, were also kind of the end of an era, for a while at least.
Oh, yeah.
It was the last roundhead-like Jeep.
Mm.
So the CJ7 kind of marked a big turning point in Jeep's history. Now, this was an AMC-designed Jeep. You had the 7-slot grille, you had the big round headlights, and it was very much looked like a Jeep. You know, had the same front end, essentially, they'd been using on the CJ5 all those years. And then the neat thing about the CJ7 was they started to offer a lot of packages. This is when they introduced, like, the Golden Eagle package, the Levi Edition package. The idea was that people would be more interested in buying these special edition packages. You know, so there was a lot of different things that and these were just decal kits a lot of times and wheel kits and things like that. But the CJ7 really started to become the people's Jeep, something real popular with the American public. It sounds like you were looking up something over there. What's that, John?
Yeah, I was going to mention it had one of the most limited edition Jeep versions or Jeep editions ever made. In 1982, they had the Jamboree Commemorative Edition. There were only 630 of those produced. And they're saying it's one of the most rare Jeeps of all time in terms of the packages and all that.
And we talked a couple episodes back about the Hearst Jeepster, which they only made like 100 of, but still, that's 600-something. That's pretty rare.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a Jamboree edition. What did that look like?
I have not. I've got a couple pictures I can pull up and show you here. They have it listed that it was actually the most heavily optioned CJ ever built. It's kind of the Rubicon of its day. And they all had a very unique dash plaque. And they were the only AMC Jeeps to actually be numbered.
Okay, well, that's interesting. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. You know, the CJ7 for me was really the first Jeep that I started to identify with and really as a small kid. Now, mind you, I'm a little older than you. I grew up in the 80s.
And I was born then.
Yeah, you were born then. I was born in the 70s. I grew up in the 80s. And you know what the popular show was of the early 1980s that all the kids watched?
Not a clue.
The Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, God.
Okay. So the Dukes of Hazzard, of course, had that just awesome high-flying 69 Dodge Charger.
Yeah, that was a sweet car.
And we all wanted that car. But
I did. I still do.
And I still do. I still do. But there's two. Did one just go by?
Yeah.
A vintage one or a new one?
It was an older one.
Oh, really? Awesome. Yeah. John's facing the window. I'm not. The Dukes of Hazzard show had two other vehicles. They had a lot of vehicles, and it had two other vehicles that I always really wanted. Now, one was Uncle Jesse's pickup truck, the 70s Ford. I always loved that thing. But Daisy Duke drove the white Jeep with the eagle on the hood.
I've never actually seen an episode of that show. I'll have to check that out.
You've never seen an episode of the Dukes of Hazzard?
I have not.
Oh my! I'm not sure we can be friends anymore, man. That's the Dukes of Hazzard. That's a classic.
There's a lot of good stuff I haven't seen.
Yeah, no. So, and actually, that was a huge sales point for Jeep. Not only to people that were interested in Jeeps, but also to females who prior to the Dukes of Hazzard show, female purchasing of Jeep was almost non-existent. A lot of women did not buy Jeep brand vehicles, but Daisy Duke driving around in that awesome Jeep, you know, in all the various escapades they had in that show, all of a sudden, and of course now with the automatic transmission, not that women can't drive manuals, many women drive manual transmissions, but it mm-hmm. became more accessible. A lot of women wanted to buy that, you know, Daisy Duke's Jeep. And guys liked it too, you know. Yeah. I mean, it was just a cool Jeep. It was that CJ7.
I've always loved the look of them.
Absolutely. So the CJ7, when it first came out, though, was not highly popular right away. In fact, a lot of people thought that Jeep had really steered away from their, you know, their roots, because now instead of having that, I don't want to use the word V-shape because that's not really correct, but instead of having that small door opening with that little swoop that kind of matched the rear tire, they now had that squared off door open.
Yeah.
And it was, and a lot of people thought that was big, but of course, as you and I know, it was a very, very handy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it made more sense. You know, the bigger guys could get in and out of it. It really worked out. So, you know, that was a big design change for Jeep, was to go to that squared off door. And of course, you know, if you've never seen a CJ7 Jeep, or at least if you can't picture one in your mind, you can go online, you can Google CJ7. But I'm sure you've seen them around town, and anybody listening to this has seen those.
Well, my uncle has a really nice, fully restored one. Absolutely beautiful vehicle.
Oh, does he?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it. What? Tell me a little bit about it.
I just know it was fully restored. The engine's built up quite a bit. I haven't seen it in a couple years, but it's, I mean, the thing's mint. You could eat off of most of it. You could probably perform surgery off the floorboards even.
Now, is that the straight six or is it the V8?
I believe his is the V8, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Right around that time, both the CJ5 and the CJ7 now became V8 available as well, too. So the CJ5, I believe, had it first, but now you had a little more power.
Yeah.
They did eventually discontinue the V8 option in the CJ7, and they went straight to the straight six exclusively. But there in the beginning, you could get a V8 in the CJ7, which was a lot of power. It was really nice power-to-weight ratio there with the vehicle. And you could get another drivetrain in it. They had a number of different transmission options, both in manual and automatic over the years. But they pretty much all had the Dana 30 front, the low-pinion Dana 30 front, which was, for the time, it was stout. It's not a particularly strong axle, but it was stout enough for some 31s and maybe some 33s. And they had the AMC 20 axle in the rear, which was a very stout axle. A little interesting side note there, the very last year of the CJ7 in 1986, you could get it with the Dana 44 rear. as a one-year option only for about half the year, and that rear end is worth some money today if you're looking to
You're mentioning some options. Actually, for export only, they actually had it available with a little Isuzu diesel engine, too.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that the little...
Yeah, the C240, 145 cubic inch, little 2.4 liter engine.
Huh. That's something... That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And the Canadian Army actually used them in 1985. They ordered just under 200 of them. So they were actually in the Canadian Army.
The CJ7 ones.
Yep.
Do they still call them a CJ, though? Which, of course, means civilian Jeep.
I don't know. They might have changed it to mean Canadian Jeep. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. That's pretty good. I didn't think of that. Yeah, it's now our Canadian Jeep 7. Yeah. Still CJ7, but it's Canadian,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this is a good point anyways to take a break and get a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a minute.
There's never just one of them. When you see one yellow jacket buzzing around, you can bet there's a whole colony somewhere nearby. Sometimes in nests as large as a basketball. Yellow jackets and wasps are bold, they're aggressive, and their stingers definitely hurt. So don't let them become a problem around your home. Call ABC Home and Commercial Services. They're the best in pests. ABC Home and Commercial Services. Call them today. 810-794-5678.
And we're back. Just before the break, we were talking about the development, or just so much the history of the CJ7, and you know, we kind of wrapped that up, what was going on with the CJ7. But the CJ7 was the end of the era for the numerical. Of course, they did have the CJ8 at the same time in the Scrambler, and then there was a CJ10, but that was a military vehicle only. Yeah. But the CJ7, AMC, when they came, I actually spoke incorrectly too. I said it was an AMC design earlier, or it was an AMC design, but then AMC was purchased by Chrysler in 1987. And around that time, there was this whole redesign of the Wrangler line. They decided they were going to change it up, and they were going to change it up pretty drastically for the 1987 model year. And they dropped the numerical designation of the line and came out with what they called the YJ, but really what they called it for the dealership and for the general public's purpose was the Jeep Wrangler. And the Jeep Wrangler, this whole new name, where they're no longer using CJ7, CJ5, and things like that, the Jeep Wrangler, they're developing this whole new brand, but you know, it really was a completely redesigned CJ7, still using kind of the CJ7 base. The body tub is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
The windshield frame is pretty much the same on the 1987 Wrangler. But what they did is they got rid of the round headlights that were on the old CJs, and they went to square headlights, which were hated at the time.
Oh, yeah. It's always looked a little goofy to me.
People to this day, it's still love hate. Yeah. People don't like it. That was only in the YJ Wranglers, the square headlights.
Thank God.
Yeah, exactly. But the Wrangler name stayed. So the CJ7 wasn't a Wrangler, but it essentially ushered in what became the Wrangler. The CJ7 was redesigned by Chrysler. Mm. Boom. We now have the Jeep Wrangler. They widened the frame a little bit. They moved the differential to the driver's side. They put overdrive transmissions in for the first time. Eventually, with the YJ, mid-production of the YJs, I think around 90 or 91, they added fuel injection. So there was a lot of development through the Wrangler line in the first generation of the Wrangler, which is the YJ. So, you know, back to our alphabet of Jeeps. Mm. You know, we went... In the beginning, all the World War II numbers, you know, the MBs, the GAs, GPs, all those. And then we went to the CJs with numbers after them. CJ2, CJ3, yeah. CJ4, CJ5s, you know, all that. And like we said, the CJ4 never hit production, but the CJ5, CJ6, CJ7. But the CJ7, because that's what we're honoring in this episode, is essentially the father of the Jeep Wrangler.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
And so... the YJ, of course, replaced that, and the YJ was pretty popular. The YJ ran from 1987 to 1995.
Hmm.
And that's a decent little run there. It was 8 years, whatever. And so, John, when you worked at the parts store back in the day,
mm-hmm.
How many people did Jeff call you up, ask for 96 Wrangler parts?
Nobody tried to pull that one on me.
I think somebody did.
There was one guy. I believe his name was Keith, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It kind of was a dead giveaway that day.
Oh, was it really now?
Yeah. No, there's a Toyota one people call about.
Yeah. We can talk about that in another episode. In 96, there was no Jeep Wrangler.
No.
But the Jeep Wrangler gets completely redesigned yet again for the 97 model year. Still called the Jeep Wrangler, but now it's the Jeep TJ. A
lot of neat different features with that one, too.
Absolutely. Now, the body tub is still pretty much the same body tub, although it doesn't directly interchange.
Correct. There's some parts new.
There are. What parts are those?
Bumpers.
Oh, the bumpers
are the same? That's pretty much it. I'm sure there's something else. None of the suspension, though?
No.
It was for the TJ. They actually went to four-link and coil springs.
Yes, they did.
And much nicer ride.
And that was the same design as the XJ Cherokee that goes all the way back to 84 for the front. But instead, the XJ used coils front, Leafs rear. This now uses coils on all four.
Yes.
And the big stepping point now for the TJ Wrangler was... Now they went back to round headlights, back to the set. Well,
thank God.
The YJ had the 7-slot grill, but it had square headlights.
Yes.
Now they're over to the TJ. They have round headlights, and they have the 7-slot grill. It looks like a Jeep again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in by most people's standards, it looks like a Jeep. But now they've actually made the suspension a lot more flexy. Better off-road.
A lot easier to build.
On-road. Yeah, easier to build. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just a couple dollars, a couple $100, you can lift those things 3-4 inches.
You can budget boost that thing like crazy. It's really nice and easy. Just swap out coil springs even and do it. I mean, you're done.
You've got a TJ, right? You've got a...
It's mostly TJ still, yeah. It's a 2001.
2001.
Yep, I've bought it and it's gone through a couple revamps. Now it's got a 4-inch lift in the Mercedes diesel engine, but it's still Jeep at heart.
Absolutely. That was the TJ, I remember back in the day, that was a huge point in the off-road industry.
Yeah.
You know, they now, like you said, they have the 4-link suspensions from the factory. Of course, there's a lot of aftermarket mods whatnot.
Yep.
But the Wrangler, like, boomed with the TJ.
Oh, yeah. And absolutely exploded.
So the TJ had a lot of neat things too. Now it was all fuel injected, once again overdrive transmissions, and then for the very first time they started offering front as an option front and rear selectable lockers and a 4-to-1 transfer case if you ordered the Rubicon package, which came out in 2004.
I didn't know they were selectable
in the TJ.
That's cool.
Yeah, they were selectable. They were actually an electric over air locker.
Oh, wow.
For 2004. And, they only had that Rubicon for the last couple of years of the TJ.
Yeah.
But what a fantastic setup.
Oh,
It was just...
I always liked the unlimited option they had from 2004 and a half to 2006. Was it 10-inch longer wheelbase, I believe it was?
Yeah, and that was another one that everybody thought they should have called the Scrambler when it came out.
Yeah.
Because it was longer. But it wasn't quite as long as a Scrambler.
No.
It was kind of in between the two.
Yeah.
But, now, once again, they had, like you said, the LJ. Mm. They still called it a Wrangler. And then, the Wrangler ran from 97 all the way up through 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So a 9-year span there with a pretty popular body style. And then, of course, they redesigned it again for 2007.
Yeah.
And for the first time in Wrangler's history, you could now get one, or Jeep's history, you can get an open-top 4-door vehicle.
Yeah.
And this is called the JK.
I love them. I love the 4-door option with that. I just think it looks very cool.
They do. They look awesome. You know, I had that orange one.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
The 6-speed one. I had a 6-speed Sport. I had an 09. It was a high-mileage vehicle. I bought it very cheap because it had just rolled over 200,000 miles. But unfortunately, my experiences with it which in hindsight I think was more an inept dealership, and I'm not going to name names, of course, but an inept dealership working on it prior to me owning it, and then actually right after me owning it that I bought it from, had damaged a lot of things. And so it was in the dealership just as much as it wasn't.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it really was. So I just, you know, I love the JKs, but then of course they did a major overhaul of the JK mid-production in 2012. They changed out the engines, they changed out the interiors. They really improved on them quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Up the gas mileage. They went from an average of 17 miles a gallon to 21 miles a gallon.
Nice.
So they really did a beautiful job with the JK.
Yeah.
And, you know, the JK, I guess, because this is the CJ7 episode, the JK was the first time where the body tub did not share the dimensions of the CJ7.
Hmm.
It was wider.
Mm-hmm.
The rear corners were slightly angled. And of course, now there's the four-door option.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, just as a brief cliff note, we're now into the JL Wranglers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all sorts of new things, and we'll talk about those in the future, of course. So going back to the CJ7, the CJ7 design that came out in 1976 was pretty much improved upon and tinkered with all the way through to 2006.
Essentially,
It was not the same vehicle.
No.
Some parts interchanged, some parts didn't. But the CJ7 was what many, many people, got into the Jeeps. That's what they got into. It was the Jeep that really got them interested.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on how old you are. Like, your age, you know, you're, I don't know, somewhere between 30 and 70.
on the very bottom of what your suggestion. Oh, yeah.
Okay, all right. You know, people your age, it was the TJs. You know, you saw those when you were in junior high, high school, people running around with those. Those interested you. My age, we saw the CJ7s and then the YJs.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those were, you know, what interested us in Jeeps.
Yeah.
I've had YJs. I've had CJ7s. I've had JKs. I've had them all. You know I'm a Toyota guy through and through, but I still have had Jeeps, and I love them. And, you know, something about the CJ7, that is the classic Jeep look.
Yeah. When most people say it, I think that's what they're thinking.
It really is. It really is. And that's why, you know, it really deserves this kind of this mention.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The CJ7 was that.
It was actually hailed as the most successful utility vehicle ever made. And I'd venture to say it's probably still there.
That could be right. Now, you know, before we go to break or anything like that, it looks like you got a lot of notes over there. Maybe some other things you wanted to mention about the CJ7.
We've hit a few of them. There's a neat 30th anniversary edition of the Rubicon Trail.
In the CJ7?
Yeah. Yep, they built a 30th. Let's see if I can find it.
But it wasn't called a Rubicon?
No, it was. Actually, that's what that Jamboree commemorative edition was. It was the 30th anniversary edition of the Rubicon Trail.
Oh, okay.
So that's how that one came to be. Just some other notes I had, like that diesel option I mentioned. It was available from 1980 to 82. Again, export only. So.
And I had never heard of that. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Unfortunately, we never got to play with that.
No, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, it was 10 inches longer than the CJ5, the wheelbase. Where else did I have here? Oh, they had over 379,299 units built.
Say that number again.
379,299. I don't know why they couldn't go for one more, but
yeah, not quite half a million. But I mean, that's a lot of Jeeps.
That is.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a lot of parts to pick from.
Well, absolutely, and I guess that's a good point to talk about this, or to I don't want to say wrap this up, but to go to break, because when we come back from break, we're going to want to talk about the collectability of the CJ7, and if you are looking to buy a CJ7 to drive or to restore or even to wheel today, what you should keep an eye out, what you should look for. Let's go to break, and we'll talk about that after the break.
See you in a bit.
Puppies are cute. Spiders are not. Spiders are creepy and ugly. But what will you do? You will call ABC Home and Commercial Services. The Spider Fighters can service your home for these unwelcome guests. ABC Spider Fighters will provide the solution for your spiders, wasps, box elder bugs, Asian lady beetles, cluster flies, and all your visiting insects. Call now for a prepaid discount. ABC Home and Commercial. The Spider Fighters. 810-794-5678.
And we are back. So before the break, we were talking about CJ7s. I know we're going to move into some of the what to look for, what not to look for, as far as options when you're looking to buy a used one. So Keith, if I'm looking to buy a CJ7, what do I want to keep an eye out for?
Well, John, you know, the CJ7 stayed pretty much the same platform from 76 all the way to 86. And there was not a lot of changes in it. So only a few with engines and things like that. And really none of them were, say, Lemon engines. You could get everything from the Iron Duke 4-cylinder, the V8, the 258 straight six. So that's going to be a personal preference thing, which engine that you would like. I would guess the only one that you might want to stay away from driveline-wise is there was a number of them that you could get the T5 five-speed manual transmission in. Now, it typically was not a very bad transmission, but it was a straight-cut gear transmission instead of being a bevel-cut gear transmission. And if you were not careful in your shifting and you did a full-throttle shift from, say, second to third, they would break. They were not a very durable transmission.
That's a bummer.
Later T5s were much better transmissions.
Yeah.
But that was one of the earliest T5s that was out there. And so I would say that's probably, not that there's anything that's a lemon with a CJ5, but that's one of the things drive-line
wise. Just concern to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. Exactly. The biggest thing with the, I said CJ5, I meant CJ7s, with the CJ7s that you're going to be looking at is overall condition of the body, condition of the frame. Frame especially. Not as bad as the YJs and TJs of later, but just like those, they did tend to have frame rust in the rear frame sections and then in the front up by the steering box.
That was my biggest question, was do they have the rust on the rear leaf spring mount like the YJs do?
Not as bad, but it is it is known to be there.
Good to know.
The frame's completely different. It is narrower than a YJ frame. And it is a fully boxed frame, I believe. Maybe not all the way through all of them. I'd have to look that up. But they tend to be a little bit better metal. But they do have frame rust issues. The body rust issues are still very common in the North as well.
Oh, yeah.
The things that I've seen over the years, I've had a number of CJs in and out of thin line off-road, and what you want to look for is essentially an unmolested CJ7, and that's pretty hard to find these days.
I believe it.
It really is. If you do find one, you want to make sure that the modifications done to it were done tastefully and they were done with thought. One of the things that was real popular in the 80s was body lifts.
Ooh.
And a lot of the body lifts on CJ7s tended to put a lot of stress on the various body mounting points on the tub. And you get a lot of damage around that. So if you're looking at one that has a body lift, you know, I'd recommend removing the body lift.
Yeah. Never been a fan of body lifts anyways.
Me neither. Me neither.
No.
You know, so that's one thing that you want to look at. Other things that you want to look at, of course, are the overall condition, rust-wise, of the body tub. If it does have fender flares, do your best to be able to peek behind them. Sometimes if they're rubber, you can kind of peek behind the fender flare a little bit and see what you have there. These are vehicles that, at this point, have been modified a lot. A lot of them have. Wiring in them as well. In fact, if you find one and you're looking to buy one, and the wiring is sketchy whatsoever, I would just say remove it completely and put a whole new harness in it. The new harnesses are very reasonable.
Painless makes a kit for that, I think.
Yeah, Painless does. Yeah. Speedway Motors does. There's a number of them. It's just not worth it.
Yeah.
Just do that. Other things I've noticed, tilt steering columns were common towards the end of the CJ production. And that was actually a GM-sourced column. And those columns of that era tended to have problems at the joint where they would loosen up.
Mm.
It's not an easy fix. It's a couple hour job with some specialty tools.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if there's any slop in the tilt steering column, keep in mind that, you know, yeah, you can do it yourself or you can have a shop do it, but you might be spending a couple hundred bucks to fix a steering column. I've had two of them now in my shop that have had a loose steering column. Yeah. In them, so.
Is that something that the common person would be able to do in their shop with regular tools or, you know, if their specialty tools required?
Well, you need like a steering wheel puller.
Okay.
And then you're also going to need a special, I'm not sure what the tool's called. I've got one, but it pushes down on the, after you pull the steering wheel off, the big plastic bezel that's under there pushes down on it so you can get the snap ring out.
Okay.
And then you can eventually pull the ignition tumbler out and you can get down into the guts of the steering column. Couple hour job to do it if you're moving slow. I mean, you could probably whip it out in an hour if you really know what you're doing and you're in there. But you're talking probably $50 to $75 in specialty tools.
Oh, wow.
Which is not a lot of money.
No, it's not bad. It's cheaper than some jobs for sure.
Exactly. You know, the other things, if you're looking at one that has been wheeled a lot or it's been modified a lot, you want to look at how the modifications have been done. There was a couple companies early in the day that were doing a lot of Chevy V8 swaps on the CJs.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very common. One of the most common engine swaps there is out there is to put a small block V8 350 Chevy into a CJ.
Did that modify the frame when you were doing that? Or is that just kind of a bolt-on setup?
The frames are nice and wide, but the issue was some of the early ones, and I've actually seen this fail twice on the trail already myself, some of the earlier kits were a straight pipe that went from the motor mount on the side of the Chevy block to the frame that was welded on there, and it was not a very well-made motor mount setup, and I've seen them fail in the engine. I was on a wheeling trip once, and the engine actually fell right out. So
that's scary.
It fell out. It fell down onto the front axle, essentially. Yeah. So that's something that you want to watch out for.
Oh, yeah.
Is what's the quality of the build? What's the quality of the modifications?
Yeah.
And if you're looking for one to restore, to go back to stock, it's sometimes pretty difficult if you find one that's been modified. If they started cutting fenders and doing all sorts of things to it, that's probably not going to be your Jeep to mess with.
Yeah.
If you're looking for one to the trail, you know, look at it, you know, that has decent axle swaps, things in it. Dana 44s and Dana 60s are common axle swaps on these.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of really neat things done over the years. It's still kind of the hammer, you know, it's a simple tool.
Oh yeah.
You can modify it to work better, but the CJ7 still works pretty well by itself.
So what would you say if I'm looking to buy one, what do you think would be about the best range of years to look for one in?
Well, really any of them, 76 to 86, they're all going to be fine. The collectability value has really started to skyrocket on them in the last couple of years, especially unmodified originals.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably looking at, for an unmodified original running and driving that has decent-looking paint, decent-looking interior, you're probably looking at, maybe upwards of $7,000-$9,000 these days.
Wow.
I would never have figured that. No, yeah. A few years ago, $2,000-$4,000, you'd get one.
I think I'll stick with my TJs for now.
Well, you know, and the TJs are starting to go north too. So, you know, in fact,
maybe I'll hold on to it for a while, it'll be worth more.
There you go. Our listeners right now, some of the best buys to make right now out there in the quote unquote vintage Wrangler market are going to be your YJ square headlight Wranglers and your TJs. Same thing on both of those models are really known for frame rust issues. You really want to look for one that has a nice clean frame, southern frame, or something that was garage kept, you know, if you're in the northern climates, something that really didn't see a lot of salt. But right now, decent YJs can be had in that couple grand range, and decent TJs are around the same. You know, $2,000-$4,000, you can find a decent one, but the prices are going up on them each year, and so I would definitely, you know, buy those now if you're looking for a deal in the collectability market.
Yeah, that was probably one of the biggest issues I had with my TJ when I started repair work. I got that old skid plate off. I think out of the six total bolts, I think I had three that were good. and the others fell out. That just that whole middle section was rotted out. I had to replace the whole section.
I remember that. And yeah. On the TJs, don't they have the captured bolts that bolt the the skid plate in?
Yep. So I started right into the cross member and the little nutsert on the back, and I ended up tubing it. I did it's probably not a very conventional repair. Certainly not by the book, but it worked.
Yeah, I've seen the job overdue. You did. It's a pretty decent job.
It's,
I mean, you're
a little overkill.
It's overkill, but at the same point, it's meant to be able to be used on the trails.
Exactly. And my figuring with doing that is eventually I want to do a little bit more lift, a little bigger tires. And when I do, I'm going to go to a long arm lift, and it's all going to pivot off a belly skid. So the heavy duty reinforcements there will pretty much carry the rest of it, and I won't have to fix the other rest.
Well, there's that.
Cheating a little bit.
Oh, well, absolutely. There's a lot of great Wranglers out there. Of course, Wranglers are the most popular model of Jeep today.
Mm-hmm.
People are buying them left and right, and more and more each day. And they're becoming more trail capable with the Rubicon models all the other things that they're doing. But of course, we're still talking about the CJ7 here, which really all the modern Wranglers have their lineage to thank back to the CJ7. And that's why, for episode 7 here, we just felt that we had to talk about the CJ7 Jeep.
Absolutely, give it its due.
What's that?
Give it its due.
Yeah, absolutely. Really give it its due. It gave us that classic Jeep look. It gave us those squared off door openings. It gave us the return of the round headlight and the 7-slot grille.
Yeah.
So, the CJ7 has really done that. And there's still a great buy out there. I'm going to predict that within the next 10 to 15 years, the CJ7, in mind you, there are some that are well over that 10 grand range already
for a
used one, modified or stock. But I think we're going to be in that point where even a restorable CJ7 is going to be approaching that point. Their collectability is going up there. The more that people still cut them up and modify them for trail use, the originals are going to be harder to find.
Yeah.
Not saying that you have to have an original. If you want to modify one, by all means, that's what we're into is off-roading.
Oh, yeah. That's what I like, the budget build stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, last year, I guess kind of wrapping up the CJ7 here, last year at the Wheels in the Woods show that we hosted through the Museum of Off-Road Adventure, we had a couple of nice CJ7s out there. We had one that was built up, had nitrous and a small block Chevy in it.
Wow.
We had another one that was on, I think, 35s that was, pretty much a trail machine only. Some great Jeeps out there. And speaking of that Wheels in the Woods show, that is coming up September 28th, 2019. And if you are interested, that is in Clay Township, Michigan. You can go to the Museum of Off-Road Adventure Facebook page. Themora.org is also the website. But you can check those out, and you can look up the Wheels in the Woods show. And this is an awesome show for off-road vehicles. It's not a off-road event where you're going to do some wheeling. It is, parking lot type show where, family-friendly, kids can go around. We're going to have some awesome events this year. We're going to do a Power Wheels Jeep race. Speaking of which, there's something else. The Power Wheels Jeeps are based to look like a CJ7.
Yep. I have one that keeps making its way around the town where I'm at. You see it in one person's garbage, and then probably 5-6 months later, it's in somebody else's. And we know it's the same one.
Okay.
My mom and I picked it up once, gave it to a friend of mine as a joke. Well, he spray painted it a different color, gave it to his girlfriend as a joke. It's still that color.
Oh, there
it's
you go.
It's the exact same one.
Well, maybe whoever owns it will bring it out to Wheels in the Woods, and they will do our Power Wheels Jeep race. Now, this is not an adult one. This is for the kids. We're going to do a scramble race through the woods. A lot of fun, real safe type of event for them. We're also going to do a RC rock crawling competition. So if you've got one of those RC cars that you're taking out and playing on concrete and stuff like that with it, we're going to have a nice course set up for that. So that's something to check out.
And awards again.
Oh, yeah. Awards
music.
Awards music. We'll have a great time. So some of our last minute plugs here. Is there anything else before we wrap up that you wanted to talk about with the Wrangler or the CJ7?
Not that I can think of. I think we hit on most of the points for it. I mean, all the way up till now with slight modifications into the JL.
Absolutely.
I was looking at the local dealership near my town. They have a whole bunch of them out on display while they're moving the lot around. So we're driving around taking a look at them. And the only thing I noticed I don't much like on the JLs, the headlight, the inner edge of the headlights actually encroaches on that 7-slot grille a little bit. Kind of takes away from
that. Yeah, I saw
that.
It's a little interesting.
Yeah.
It hasn't really grown on me yet either.
I don't like that, but I like the hood bump. That I like.
And the little bevel on the top of the tub is almost starting to look like a Land Rover.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing that. So. Yeah. But, well, so, you know, that's not really a complete Wrangler history, but it's a pretty good one. It gives you an idea. Brief overview. View, talking about the CJ7 being the beginning of it. So our final plugs here, if you're interested, in following us more, go to wheelandradio.com. We're also on the Podbean app. We're on many other apps.
iTunes.
Many other apps on there. So send us a like, send us a comment through one of the services. If you would like us to answer a question on air, we'd be more than welcome to do that. We'd love to do that.
Yeah, if you got any questions, suggestions, or want to hear us talk about anything in particular, drop us a line.
Absolutely, do that. And then we're Wheeling on Facebook, and also check out the Museum of Off-Road Adventure if you'd like. And I guess that's about it for this one. John, anything else?
I think I'm all set.
All right, signing off. This is Keith and Johnny Orange.
Have a good one, everybody.